and there was nothing in the city schools at all, but there was one at the Southern California Southern California Military Academy in Long Beach.
Oh, that's good. Oh, good. You answered a question.
There was a guy named Ray Perry on the faculty here who finally went up to USC, and he was my friend and benefactor, and he had a brother-in-law who was the commanding officer of all the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a job up there with the rank of captain, $45 a month in board and room.
Due to depression, that's great.
And I stayed there one semester. And then Ray Perry, he got me into the city schools after that, and I stayed with the Woodrow Wilson. That was my first tour of duty, and then to Hoover, then to the war, and then out the state. But anyway, Bob Kennedy was the editor. And so I was up at the military academy and also getting my master's at USC. Well, he had an offer to go up to Cal Poly at the San Luis Obispo. And we said, what do you want to go to that cattle outfit there? You know, and he said, you're an English professor. You'll just die on the vine. He had the job of teaching English, working in the library, and being an assistant to the then president, who was a very powerful man, not only on the campus, but in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And we said, you're a dummy to do this, Robert. He was in my wedding party, incidentally, too. So anyway, as the years went by, well, he became the assistant and did nothing else but help the man. And then he became acting president, or not acting president, but they sent him down to the Cal Poly there at
Pomona.
Uh-huh. And he became the president there.
Wow.
And then the first thing you know, they brought him back to San Luis Obispo, and he became president there. So you see, when he retired, I told the fellow who was a master of ceremonies that we had encouraged him not to go there. And then he finally wound up as president. Why, we were going to keep this in mind if we ever had to do it over ourselves.
Yeah, good thing he didn't listen to you guys, huh?
Yeah, right.
Now, was he a teacher at this time, or was he a student?
He was a student, just like I was.
Kennedy.
I had to leave in mid-term, and then I didn't become... I think I was associate editor on that one, and then this gal became the art editor and took my place and completed the thing. Her name was... Something. I can't remember.
I don't see. He's not in here.
Can't remember her name. She's a nice girl. She did it.
Yeah, because I was reading the. Oh, there he is, Robert Kennedy, right there.
There he is. Yeah. Bob. Yeah, he was president.
Evelyn Henning is
and
later
then, of
to
course,
go.
He became a very senior president.
Mm-hmm.
And. He was down here once, I don't know whether you want this or not, it was when they were investigating the current president here, Thomas B. Day, and he was on a committee that came down here. Do you want me to keep talking about that?
Yeah, anything. I mean, this is we're trying to get an overview.
Well, anyway, I guess it all happened to where they more or less told Day what they had discovered and whatever, and suggested ways he could maybe improve his position.
Yeah.
And I think it helped him.
Hopefully. This is hopefully.
I will say no more.
No. I was reading this. They had these nice little quips, and it says George's a fine cover design.
Mm-hmm.
And it says here that wish he hadn't gotten that job teaching. Captain. He's a good title, but teaching at a military academy 100 miles away was hard on the staff.
Well,
I was wondering, what military academy?
Well, see, I was associate editor at the time, and this gal here. Where is she here?
Whoops. It's all right. Evelyn Henning?
Here she is, Evelyn Henning, yeah. And I've never been able to find her since then. She moved up to San Francisco somewhere, and they never were able to get her address. We tried to get her down here, you know, for some of the reunions.
You wear these nice tweed coats here. I mean, the guy, I found that interesting. These nice tweed
I think I got that. step there. Well, I was at the military academy for $30. You know,
with
the vest, double-breasted.
And probably all wool.
But yes. Oh, I kid you not. Yeah, Marston's basement.
It's now probably $700.
Had an old friend there. He used to always suit me up, you know.
Yeah, that style is still today.
Oh, yeah. Double-breasted is back
again. Yeah. It is really nice. As a student, who influenced you the most? Teacher or student? Who influenced you the most as a student?
You mean a teacher?
I don't care if it was a teacher or a student. What was the strongest influence you had?
Well, I think my strongest influence was Everett D. Jackson, because he was chairman of the department.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew I was going to be an art or even be an art teacher. I started out to be a hotel manager.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, boy, this is the thing, you know. You walk around the hotel and shake hands with people, and you get all your food free and all the drinks, you know, all that stuff. They failed to tell me at the time that a good hotel manager has to know how to balance the books. So he's got to go to business school and learn all of that, plus be charming and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So when I found that out, just by accident, I had a friend named Dick Offen, and he wanted to go to work for the San Francisco Examiner. He had an inn there where they were going to put him into advertising. So he says, when I graduate from here, he says, I want to take one course at least on how to draw, because I'll be selling and advertising, and maybe I'll have to draw a little picture or something for a client. Why don't you come down and take this class with me? There's a fellow down there named Jackson who's taken the course. So I did.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing led to another. I took another course and another. And then I said to Mr. Jackson, I said, you know, I'm really a professional musician, but the big bands are beginning to fade and all that. I said, do you think maybe I could be an art teacher? He says, you better do that. If you stay on as a musician, you'll probably lose your shirt, just like all the organ players in the theater, you
mm-hmm.
know, and the big bands quit and it fell apart. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I took his advice.
Yeah.
And so and then there was a lady named Patty Patterson who was very instrumental in helping me out. She had been at Chouinard Art Institute over the years and came down here. She was very knowledgeable, and she also handled all the educators and all the education classes. And she was very, very good to me, and bless her heart, and did a lot for me. And then, of course, I mentioned Ray Perry over in education, and he taught education over there, and he had charge of all the cadet teachers.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, to be a cadet teacher, you had to do one semester in the training school and one semester out in either a junior high or a high school. Well, I did mine at Hooper, and he helped me get that job, like I said, there up at Long Beach. And he came down for the 37th reunion, and he was my guest that day with his wife.
Oh.
He's living up there at that Leisure World thing, you know, beyond.
Yeah, Laguna Niguel.
But I haven't seen him since.
Yeah.
So those are the three people particularly that influenced me the most.
Do you have any stories of the Aztec Bowl construction? Because it was being constructed during your time here. Was there anything special about the Aztec Bowl? I mean, they're about to tear it out now.
The ball?
The bowl.
Oh, the bowl.
Yeah, the bowl.
Well, I can remember the bowl from the standpoint that it was done by the WPA.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was one steam shovel and then hundreds of people with picks and shovels, you know, around in there. And on campus, too, there was a lot of WPA projects, you know, for students and things. I remember I had charge of one that did posters for the theater, and I'd hire guys to do the posters, and we got paid a little money to do it, that kind of thing. But outside of the bowl there, I know we had our games in there before the big stadium was built, the football games. I didn't play in the school band here. I was too busy playing downtown, you know.
Yeah.
And so I never really got to many football games. So
That's
about all I remember.
Yeah. The dedication of the Aztec statue and base, were you a part of that? I know it was done by the class of 37. They didn't know where they were going to put the statue of Montezuma. And then you guys...
Well, that of course, was Donald Horde, whom I knew quite well mm-hmm. over the years, and I remember when he was working on that. Everett hired him to teach here. He taught a class in sculpture, and I took a course from him, and I remember at the time that they decided to put it in the quad because the quad was the center of all the activities mm-hmm. surrounding the thing, where there was canyons and, you know, you'd walk out of the where the silos are there, and out there there was a little road, and then there was a great big canyon, and you had to wander around to get over to the ladies' gym.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's all smoothed out, and we have this beautiful, you know, entrance.
Yeah.
But it was cornered on the cob in those days, and so the quad was the middle of everything, and a logical place to put the statue.
Yeah.
And I remember the dedication they had, people throwing pebbles and using pictures of it.
Yeah.
And Horde was a very shy man, you know. He could hardly say a speech in public. He was great all by himself. And he was there all dressed up in a suit, which he didn't usually wear. He was chiseling, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember it was quite an event.
Yeah, it was.
Houses were a very important event in those days. We'd get parents out here. Great PR, you know, when they finally even gave it up. But we'd have thousands of people out here. And each department who could had displays. And, of course, art was just great for them.
Mm-hmm.
Music department had singers and musicians playing. And the theater did something or other. And the rest of them, I suppose, had chemistry, did whatever they did. Whatever they could, you know.
Why do you think they stopped the open house?
I don't know why, other than maybe they didn't become weren't as fashionable as they used to be and didn't draw on the people.
Mm-hmm.
I remember coming back here after World War II. You know, I came in right after the war. I got out of the war in mid-year and went back to Hoover and taught one semester, and then Everett Jackson very kindly asked me to join his faculty. And then they decided that year not to have an open house, although we had things fixed up, you know, if they wanted it. And from then on, it sort of went downhill. It continued, I think, for several years, but for some reason they gave it up, and I can't remember the reason other than maybe the attendance fell off.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't quite as exciting as it used to be. There were other things that were more important.
In the art department, did you see a lot of changes, the progression of out here? I mean, because San Diego State was known for its art department. I think it still is.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, in the old days there, when I started out, there were only, say, 5 members of the art department, plus part-time people like Donald Ward or a few others they'd pick up like that. And then when I came back as a teacher, I was glad to get the job here because I had an offer to go to San Jose as an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
This fellow I met in USC, his name was Mark Reitzel. He was a Middle Western painter of farms and silos, that kind of thing. Made a fortune out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he offered me an instructorship down here while Sully Hartigan was around and Walter Heppner. And I said, I said, I think I've got an offer as an assistant professor. I think I fibbed a little bit. And I'm saying this sort of voice. And but then they got Sully and they found they did have an assistant professorship. So I got the job here. I phoned Reitzel and I said, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So then we started in then. And slowly I noticed that the open house thing went downhill.
Yeah.
And then we began to build because of all the GIs and the great growth that started after the war there.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept adding faculty, and pretty soon it grew from 5 to 10 to 15 to 20. I think nowadays before they had this drop here because of the money problems, there was 32 faculty members over there.
Did you notice just the change in hiring? Because before, Everett Jackson would just go to the president say, well, I want to hire this guy?
In the old days, Ed Carte Blanche, more or less, was the thought that you could hire anybody he wanted. And he had a tendency, of course, to hire somebody who'd been one of his pupils because he was sure of them, whereas if he had to take somebody off campus, he wasn't too sure.
Yeah.
But Malcolm Love finally called him in, and they became good friends over the years because Eileen Jackson was very instrumental in introducing the Loves to all the very powerful people downtown and in the county and helped him get started, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Gave him a firm footing. And he said, Everett, you can't hire any more of your